All right. Hello, everybody. It's Friday.
Let
here
her
at
rip.
WHBC 90.3 FM in New York, of course. And it's time for American Hit Radio. We're here every Friday. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, with my lovely wife, Heidi Morales Ryan. And as usual, the multi-talented Earl Holder behind the boards for us, holding things together for us. As you know, on Fridays, the Friday edition of American Hit Radio is generally what we call How Music Changed, where we look at a specific artist or style of music and relate it to how music developed in this country throughout the past 100 years. This is our eighth show, actually the third part of our eighth show, which is dedicated to New Orleans jazz. It's a little bit complicated with the multiple parts, but that's what we have to do with a one-hour program, especially if the artist or the subject demands a little bit more in-depth look than we could possibly grant it in 1 hour. Today's show is our final entry in a look at the roots of New Orleans jazz, actually the roots of all jazz, but we're looking at some of the most important artists that came out of the city of New Orleans. And I'm really glad right now to say that what we've been doing more or less is we've been playing the songs in something resembling a chronological order. And if you've been listening from the first part until now, you might have been hearing something that resembles a sense of development in the music, which is exactly what we're trying to convey in the first place. And I think that today with the final show, you're going to see how we ended up moving from this type of ensemble playing where everybody was more or less, you know, freely moving about in one style, and how it begins to suggest what eventually became big band jazz as the 20s morphed into the 30s. I'm hoping that's what we will hear on this show. I'm also happy about this show in another way. In another sense, is that we're going to get a chance to listen to some of the greats that we didn't get a chance to cover in our other two shows. This is going to be a chance for us to pretty much wrap everything up. And of course, with the time remaining at the end, I want to dedicate as much as possible to the late, great King Oliver, Joe King Oliver, since he is the featured artist of this genre for us and probably named King for a very, very apt reasons. He's the person that is responsible for so much. So let's kick off the show with one track by a band known as the New Orleans Owls. Now, in this instance, there's nobody in this band particularly who went on to unique solo fame. Really, not many of its sidemen became hugely famous. Some of them became marginally famous in certain ways. But what's really interesting about this is going to be one of those bands that, as I said, you might begin to hear certain influences on what eventually became, say, the late 20s dance bands and suggested what would eventually become big band music. It's also worth mentioning that you should not confuse this band, the New Orleans Owls, with
Who?
Another band.
Who?
Very good.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
That was too cute. There's another band called Jimmy Blythe's Owls. But Jimmy Blythe was a precursor to the boogie-woogie style of piano playing. And he was also recording at around this same time. And coincidentally, his band was also called the Owls. This is a different outfit altogether. They are known as the New Orleans Owls. And the name of this track is called That's a Plenty.
Thank you.
it is. That's the New Orleans Owls, the track called That's a Plenty. Now, as I said, if you were following this from the beginning, you'd already, first of all, you'd hear a huge advantage in the recording quality. Right now, we're focusing on songs that were recorded. Let's see, that track went down in 1927. So keep in mind that every song that we've been playing for our coverage of New Orleans jazz predates 1930. We have really never crossed that decade. We're trying to keep things flowing as smoothly as possible, and we'll get there in future shows. I want to stay within the 20s to maintain the feel for what it was like. I'm also hoping that if you get a chance to really listen to this song, you might be able to close your eyes and imagine what it would be like to hear this stuff. Fact is, if you went to New Orleans today, you'd be able to find, if you looked hard enough, you'd be able to find this type of music on any given day in the city. It's just, it might take a little bit of searching out, but it still survives there.
The Palm Court has a tri jazz band playing.
Yeah, there's a few places that feature the Palm Court is, you know, almost certainly one of them. And it's, when you do see it, it's a type of music that is immediately infectious. You can't help but smile, and you would not be able to leave the room until the band was done. It's just that good. The problem, of course, that we have today, though, with these original recordings is that they are 80 years old. And it's very difficult sometimes to hear through the audible limitations of the recordings. But hopefully, you know, you're listening with us and trying to see through that. This next track is a really good example as well of some of the changes that were taking place. And just for the personnel involved, it's incredible. It's just a very simple trio. It starts out, I believe, the first minute or a minute and a half, it's essentially solo piano. And then the second half, the pianist is joined by a clarinet player and a drummer. And you don't get much better than this when the lineup is Jelly Roll Morton and the Dodds Brothers.
Wow.
It's Baby Dodds, of course, on drums, and Johnny Dodds, one of the most premier New Orleans clarinetists who we've featured on numerous tracks already. But we haven't really played very much in this series of shows regarding Jelly Roll Morton, because we dedicated three shows to him on an earlier program, you know, in an early set.
Right.
But you really can't sidestep him completely, and this is a song that needs to be looked at. This is an absolutely gorgeous recording and a perfect example of what the smaller groups were like in the city of New Orleans in the 20s. Here then is Jelly Roll Morton with the Dodds Brothers. The track is entitled Wolverine Blues. What a beautiful piece of music that is. It's just great to hear two masters, and I actually should say three, including Baby Dodds on drums, but of course the drummer never really gets to shine on these early recordings simply because it would have overwhelmed the recording equipment. But hearing Jelly Roll Morton and of course Johnny Dodds on clarinet is just, it's remarkable. And you can really see just why Jelly Roll Morton has got the reputation that he has on that track because of how brilliant his playing is. Now, that song is going to be a very interesting, provided interesting comparison to our next track, which is credited to Jimmy Noon's Apex Club Orchestra. Now, Jimmy Noon was another New Orleans clarinetist, probably the third most famous clarinetist out of the city after Sidney Bechet and Johnny Dodds. So, now, speaking of Sidney Bechet, I should mention he's somebody that we haven't focused on an awful lot yet in this set either, because we're going to be focusing on him on a future show.
Right.
But it's nice here because having just heard, Johnny Dodds on the last track, to hear Jimmy Noon and what his style of playing is on this track. And another interesting comparison as well is that the piano player for Jimmy Noon happens to be Earl Hines. And it would be very interesting to compare Earl Hines' style of piano playing with that of Jelly Roll Morton. Both of them are masters of the instrument, but their sense of syncopation is quite different. I don't quite know how to put it in words, but Earl Hines is the type of piano player that you could tell who it is in 10 seconds. He's got his very strange, unique, thoroughly his own way of going about syncopation and phrasing and stop and go. And he'll go from triplets to 16th notes and very interesting patterns.
A lot of musicians, you can tell who they are just by the way the intonation of their notes or something like that. It's like a second voice almost.
Absolutely. Some of the best players, I think you can say that about right away. You hear them and you go, oh, I know who that is. And that is definitely the case with Earl Hines. And perhaps you'll hear that on this track, as I said. It's credited to Jimmy Noon's Apex Club Orchestra. The name of the track, naturally enough, is called Apex Blues. Thank you. it is, the Apex Blues by Jimmy Noone's Apex Club Orchestra. Now, this is something that is almost redundant when you read the history of some of these players. But you might notice, first of all, let me finish that thought. The person who taught Jimmy Noone how to play, or the person who took his lessons from, was named Lorenzo Tio Jr. And we discussed him on earlier shows as being like the father of New Orleans clarinet playing. Mm-hmm. And as this show goes on, you'll see why. I mean, I get the impression that Lorenzo Tio taught every single human being who ever played the clarinet how to play. Jimmy Noone took lessons from Lorenzo Tio Jr. as well. He even took lessons from Sidney Bechet, and he took lessons from Sidney Bechet when he was only 13 years old, if you can imagine that.
Wow.
He's 13 years old, and he's teaching somebody else how to play. That says an awful lot.
Sounds like one of your kids.
Well, another thing that I could have mentioned this before the track played, but if you listen to Jimmy Noone's clarinet style, you'll notice that it's very smooth. It's not as many notes as what you would hear from somebody like Johnny Dodds. And it had a huge influence on the playing of somebody like Benny Goodman. Or the way Benny Goodman, when he was playing clarinet, I think that he probably picked up an awful lot of his style from listening to somebody like Jimmy Noone. Now, since we're making comparisons, this next track will serve just as well in the way that it's coming up right now to do the same thing again. Now, this is credited to a clarinetist named Omer Simeon. Now, guess who Omer Simeon took lessons from?
Tio?
Lorenzo Tio Jr. That's who he learned everything from. And the piano player in this band is also Earl Hines. So, again, and this is another one, and like the track we heard before the last track, it's also a trio of players. So you have yet another chance to compare the clarinet style, hear a little bit more from Earl Hines, yet somebody else who learned how to play from Lorenzo Tio Jr. And in this instance, check out the melody. The name of the track here that we're going to play is called Smokehouse Blues, but doesn't it sound an awful lot like Lazy River? Simeon with, of course,
is that Omer? O-M-E-R?
O-M-E-R. I'm saying Omer, but Boy, you know how I've been with pronunciations on some of these.
Well, I didn't know if you were doing like the English Homer.
Omer. No, Omer. It is. O-M-E-R is his name. So I hope I'm saying it right. I mean, whenever I'm saying something that doesn't just roll right off my tongue, I'm always worrying about that. I'm terrible with accents. The cool thing about that, again, hearing Earl Hines, is and I'll tell you how it is that I can always tell that it's Earl Hines quite easily. He has this effortless way of moving from swing beat to an even feel, like double time, and he can go back and forth with total effort, and then he'll always throw in those high note flourishes where he's just playing, like bouncing between a few notes as he does these changes, and it's just a beautiful thing. He continued to do this right on up until the 70s. He was playing alive and well, semi-well for an old man playing in the 70s. He even appeared on a Ry Cooder record called Paradise and Lunch that I remember, and he was brilliant on that, and still sounded very much like he did back then. As for Omer Simeon, he eventually became one of the favored clarinetists for Jelly Roll Morton, who used him on a lot of his band sessions as well. So there you have that. Let me remind you that you're listening to How Music Changed here on WHPC 90.3 FM. We do this every Friday. We're also here on Tuesdays. On Tuesdays, we have what we just call American Hit Radio, when we look at a specific era and play the hits of that. Now, we would consider that to be comparably much more contemporary, even though it might be the 50s or the 60s or the 70s or the 80s. You might think it's oldies, but you don't know what an oldie is until you find out how music changed on Fridays when we cover this stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, the next track, this is a good time for me to just give another shout out and some warm thanks to a good friend of mine named Joe Loro at Historic Films. Joe is a music buff, especially with this style. In fact, Joe has dedicated his life and now his work.
I would say he's a conservationist.
Yeah, he is. He's a music and film conservationist. Joe has made it his livelihood to preserve as much of these old recordings as he possibly can. And that includes film and footage and stuff like that. If you see certain clips of really old clips that might be utilized in a documentary, or certain films that are dedicated to the people's, you know, famous people's lives that predate the modern era, Joe is very often involved. And I called on his help when I was putting these shows together, because Joe's knowledge regarding this stuff is immense. And he was kind enough to take a great deal of time, actually, to burn a CD for me from his own 78 RPM collection. And this is interesting, because what he actually did was he took the 78 RPM records and transposed them digitally to give them to me so that I could play them on the air. And he is the person who gave me this next track, and I never heard of this artist before until he gave it to me. And I'm really glad that he did, because as a drummer, I remember, I believe it was on last week's show, I was talking about Baby Dodds and Paul Barber, and again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, as being the two most influential New Orleans drummers, and it turns out that there's a third, and his name is Monk Hazel. This is the featured artist on this next track. It's credited to Monk Hazel's Bienville Orchestra, or the Bienville Roof Orchestra, which kind of makes sense, because it's so hot in the city, you'd probably be playing on the roof more often than not in a lot of these clubs. Monk Hazel was a drummer who also occasionally played brass instruments as well. And if you had followed, he had a very long career. It lasted a really long time. In fact, he was even recording in the mid to late 50s under his own name. And he was so well known at that time that his sidemen on that session included both Pete Fountain and Al Hurt.
Wow.
So that'll give you some indication of who Monk Hazel is. But this recording goes all the way back again to 1928, I believe, another very early recording. And as I said, you might hear a little bit of surface noise, because this is straight from the 78, folks, but this is a really great, interesting, upbeat number entitled High Society.
Thank you.
Beautiful piece of work. Very sophisticated, too, especially if you compare it to some of the earlier recordings when we started our show a couple of weeks ago, when we started in, say, around 19. Recordings are actually coming from 19. Actually, we played some recordings from 1917, if I remember, to start off the program. And then that was really rough. So you can see how this is beginning to develop and roll into something different.
This recording.
Yeah. Again, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
That was great.
Wait yet.
And I really like hearing the vinyl on it, too. I think that adds a little bit of class to it. Now, as I said, the featured artist, and we'll probably end, in fact, I know we're going to end with the music of Joe Oliver, but this next orchestra is probably an orchestra that eventually usurped Joe Oliver's status as things developed because of a couple of bad business decisions and whatnot that were made by Joe Oliver in his career. This artist is actually... Lewis Russell and the Lewis Russell Orchestra. And this is about as good of an example of soloists playing together in a way that is now becoming the modern way of going about New Orleans jazz as I could possibly imagine. Let me tell you a little bit about Lewis Russell and who's in the band. Well, first of all, Lewis Russell was born in Panama, and he actually won $3,000 in a lottery.
Wow.
Back then, which
is like winning $3 million almost.
Well, maybe not that. I think that it might be like winning maybe $150,000. It's a lot of money. It was a lot of money then. And it was enough for him to move with his family to the United States. And he moved to New Orleans, where he made a living for a short while as a pianist. Well, actually, for a long while, ultimately. Because soon after not playing solo, he eventually found himself in King Oliver's band. And he was the piano player for King Oliver for a number of years. He even followed King Oliver when he relocated to New York for a while. He was with the band there. But by 1929, Russell had his own band, 10-piece band.
Wow.
So it was getting big.
That's a lot of mouths to feed.
But the thing is, they were good. They were, as this track will attest. Now, the thing that's really interesting about it is that right off the bat, he had four phenomenally talented soloists in the band. He had Henry Red Allen on trumpet. We'll get to him in a little bit. He had J.C. Higginbottom on trombone. He had an alto sax player named Charlie Holmes and a clarinetist named Albert Nicholas. Oh, by the way, guess who Albert Nicholas studied with?
T.O.
Lorenzo T.O. Jr., that's right. He taught him as well. So you've got these four soloists all playing, vying for space on a Lewis Russell recording, and... propelling all of this, of course, is Lewis Russell on piano, first of all, but also one of the most incredible rhythm sections that the city of New Orleans has ever known. The bass player is Pops Foster, who we had discussed earlier, and the drummer is Paul Barbarin, or Babarin, however you would say his name. So imagine all these people together on one track. It's just, it's totally glorious. And this is probably a brilliant example of the genius of New Orleans jazz as it was beginning to develop and now is known throughout the world, how it became something even bigger than what its roots originally were. Naturally enough, as I said, I guess the song takes its name from Louis Russell's roots. The name of the track is Panama. Phenomenal piece of work there called Panama. Of course, that's the Louis Russell Orchestra. Now, of course, you hear the way that they're switching solos around in there, and one is better than the next. So it's a really good example of that moving away from the ensemble and more toward the solo. As I said, you'd be hearing that eventually happening, and now we're full-blown into what that's
about.
Well,
you always read, even I guess Jack Kerouac wrote about how, you know, they'd get together late at night in apartments, and jazz musicians would do the whole solos, playing solos, cutting each other. So.
Definitely, definitely.
That's
rent parties, that sort of thing, when you get together and play. That was a big part of it. In fact, there's a lot of songs about, you know, rent parties back then, you know, rent party rag and things like that that were going on. Henry Red Allen, the trumpet player on that track, would be around for quite a while. Back then, he suffered only because he was in the shadow of Louis Armstrong, as every trumpeter was. I mean, there was no way. Once Louis Armstrong became known, he was just so phenomenally above and beyond almost anybody else, with that huge, rich tone, and it is his ability to do virtually anything It was almost like the hand of God was on Lewis's shoulder, and everybody else. You could have been absolutely fantastic and phenomenal at your instrument, but no matter, you'd always be compared to Lewis. And poor Henry Red Allen, I think, had that happening. But he recorded for a while, and you could actually hear some of his latter day recordings when Lewis's star began to fade. Not his talent, but when his star began to fade, when Henry Red Allen would still be playing, and you'd be hearing some very interesting tracks by him throughout the 30s, 40s, and even into the early 50s. The drummer, Paul Barbarin, I'll say, or Barbarin, however you want to say his name. I'm sorry, I apologize for that.
I'd say Barbarin.
Besides, you know, being a great drummer, and I said, and playing other instruments as well, he was also known as a songwriter. And he wrote two fairly well-known songs in the New Orleans style. One was called Bourbon Street Parade, and another song called The Second Line. So that being said, and we've discussed what The Second Line is, the parade returning from the gravesite, when usually the band plays in double time. So it's somewhat fitting, I presume, to note that he literally died while he was taking part in a New Orleans street parade. He was doing that when he eventually I guess his heart went, and that was it,
But then they had to start all over again.
I guess they come back a couple of days and do it all over again. But Paul Barbarin has played over the years with King Oliver, Lewis Russell, Jelly Roll Morton, Louis Armstrong, and Sidney Bechet. He played with all the greats. So that says a lot right there. Now, our next track, but let me remind you again, you're listening to WHPC 90.3 FM. Here in Garden City, New York. I'm Tom Ryan. The name of the show is How Music Changed with my co-host Heidi Morales Ryan. And you can hear us every Friday as we cover music from anywhere within the past 100 years as we jump through time and discuss the most influential aspects of our musical culture.
And tell them where they can hear it again.
If you like the show, or if you missed some of it, or if you want to catch up on previous shows, we have them all saved on our websites. You could go to AmericanHitRadio.com or AmericanHitNetwork.com, where you'll see the most recent shows right there on the homepage. You can play them just by clicking on them. If you follow them through, you also might be able to find that we've got a very deep collection of our earlier shows.
An archive, if you will.
Exactly right. And they're all archived at our website, which is entitled Shut Up and Listen. That's S-H-A-D-D-U-P and Listen, A-N-D-L-I-S-T-E-N.com. And we've got a good year and a half worth of shows there, including the entire How Music Changed collection. So if you want to catch up and listen to these shows in chronological order, hey, that might be a fun thing to do this weekend. You'll certainly be able to learn a lot, and and I hope that they're fun and entertaining for you.
Because there's a quiz at the end of the website.
Yeah, we're going to have ten years from now, we're going to have a quiz. We're going to have a catch-up quiz. Well, as you know, we are focusing now on the New Orleans jazz greats from the 20s. And this next artist is named Wingy Minone. And
that's quite a name.
He is a Dixieland trumpeter. And it's I guess if you listen to his style and everything else, a lot of people tended to compare him later on with Louis Prima, another
New Orleans
cornetist or trumpet player from around that time. An interesting fact about Wingy Minone is that he only had one arm. He lost his right arm at the age of 10 in a streetcar accident, but he hit it well. He had a prosthetic, and really, if you didn't know it, you would never know that he only had this one arm. And he was really good at that jivey style, a very energetic guy.
What instrument did he play?
Trumpet.
Okay.
And he had he was one of those guys that really was able to put on a great show while he was performing. Now, we're talking about songs that suggest others. Listen to this. This track is called Tar Paper Stomp. Keep in mind that this came out a good 10 years before Glenn Miller recorded In the Mood. Tell me if you think that maybe Glenn Miller might have gotten his idea from this track.
What was he listening to, right?
Exactly. Mm. Here's Wingy Minone and the name of this track. It's not In the Mood. It's 10 years before that, and this one is called Tar Paper Stomp. Thank you. Actually, that track is credited on the disc to Barbecue Joe and his hot dogs. Of course, that's Wingy Minone on trumpet, and the name of the track is Tar Paper Stomp, which quite obviously had a huge, huge, huge influence on the big band era, most notably
that
Glenn
swing
Miller.
Sound.
And I mean, the song of World War II probably was In the Mood, and now you can see where its roots are, going all the way back, like most of this stuff, goes back to New Orleans. I got one more track that I want to cover here before we get to King Oliver stuff. And this is by what you could call a New Orleans supergroup. I remember, Heidi, you had noted on one of the earlier programs that the bands kept, seems as if they were short-lived, they'd break up, members would change constantly, and things like that would be happening a lot. And here's another very good example of that happening. This is essentially a supergroup that just came together for recording, much like what you would have seen in the 70s or the 80s or maybe even today for a short while. But the personalities eventually get in the way and cause the band to become short-lived. This group featured the talents of both Sidney Bechet, of course, the great clarinetist and of New Orleans, along with Tommy Ladnier, again, how do you pronounce his name? Ladnier, really well-known trumpeter from the city of New Orleans. A lot of people see Tommy Ladnier as the bridge between the style of King Oliver and Louis Armstrong. He played with King Oliver, and obviously he was very influenced by him. Now, as much as Louis Armstrong would say that he pays huge, huge, huge respect to King Oliver his whole life, never said anything else but said that he was one of the best trumpet players he'd ever heard, and almost everything he learned, he owes everything to
the king.
To Papa Joe, Joe Oliver. But the fact of the matter is, as you know, Lewis really, like I think I've mentioned this before, you couldn't really keep Lewis in a bag because he was just, he had to be a soloist. Tommy Ladnier, on the other hand, does a pretty good job of walking the fine line between where Joe Oliver was as a supreme melodicist and where Louis Armstrong eventually took the music, which was as a supreme soloist. And you might be able to hear that on this track. Well, Sidney Bechet, of course, shines throughout, as he always does. Some people say that the tracks that are recorded by Sidney Bechet under the name of the New Orleans Feet Warmers is some of his best work. So you can decide for yourself when you hear this. As I said, the name of the band here, it's actually credited to the New Orleans Feet Warmers, and this track is entitled, I Found a New Baby. Thank you. All right. There's a beat for you.
That's jazz hot.
You're not kidding. That's the New Orleans Feet Warmers, which is to say Sidney Bechet and Tommy Lanier playing together. Now, I also broke my decade timeline there. So we've gone as far as we can. That was actually recorded in 1932. So that pretty much sums it up, which means it's time for me now to go back. We're going to jump back pretty much 10 years from before that recording was made now to discuss King Oliver and some of the finer recordings that we didn't cover yet in our earlier shows. Pick up on some of the stuff that we didn't get a chance to get to on those shows. Now, it's hard to really convey the genius and the importance of King Oliver solely through his records, simply because, like most artists that date back to that era, there's really not enough recorded evidence to really hear how much he shines. And because the best stuff that really is truly representative of his band all dates from 1923 and 1924, when the recording methodology
was not there.
Really just not there. Like you said, there's still acoustic recordings and it's really tough. But for the most part, here are the people that were in his band at that era. Of course, Joe Oliver was on trumpet. He's playing in Chicago. After he got set up, he says, you know what, I need a second trumpet player. So he calls to his friend and protege in New Orleans and says, come up and join me. Louis Armstrong comes up and joins him.
Yes.
So on second cornet is Louis Armstrong. The clarinetist is Johnny Dodds. The trombonist is Honoré Dutry. The pianist, or the piano player, is Lil Hardin, who eventually became Lil Armstrong. Very talented piano player. And the drummer, Baby Dodds. That was the core of the band. And that is what eventually made up the most classic lineup for King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band. Here's a wonderful track, very representative. Again, it's old. We're going back now to 1924. So please, you know, bear with the sound quality of these songs as best you can. But they're really worth hearing for their historic value and just for the wonders, because everything that we've heard in this entire show can more or less be credited in one way or another to what was established by King Oliver earlier in the decade. Here's a great track by King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band. This is entitled Chimes Blues. Thank you. Chimes Blues by the late, great Joe King Oliver. It's a shame that great things really could have happened for him, but it didn't work out that way. He wasn't the world's best businessman. He made a couple of bad decisions. He would hold out for more money, which often meant that he would end up getting fired. He had a chance of becoming huge in New York, but that's exactly what he did, and that didn't work out. He had dental problems, and that made it difficult for him to play cornet later in his life. Eventually, at the time of his death, he ended up working as a manager and a custodian in a pool hall. That's what was happening as he died. So it's such a shame. But let's play one more track before we go by King Oliver. This one is entitled Canal Street Blues. It's been great fun, and I want to thank everybody for listening. Well, we covered our three shows. We're looking at some of the greats of New Orleans jazz. Thank you so much for listening with us. We will be back next Friday with another edition of How Music Changed, and of course, we'll be here on Tuesday as well with American Hit Radio. Thank you so much again for listening, and I will see you then. Heidi, thank you so much. Earl, thank you again.
Thank you. Good night.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye-bye now.